Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Milwaukee Art Museum has been renovated, has it ever, and there is a new lakefront atrium. The art has entirely new spaces. New art is on display. 1,000 new art pieces are on display that you haven't seen, and also art you might be familiar with in brand new places, so you see it for the first time. It has really been quite a long process and worth the wait. I had the great pleasure of going on a tour with Allison Peck this morning at the art museum, and I was just ready to, you know, not go anywhere else for the next 4 days. I didn't want to particularly come to work. It's just terrific. There are a lot of things that were in storage that you haven't had a chance to see. There is a 20th century design area. There's a beautiful photography gallery. Special wallpaper has been chosen so you feel as though you're in the century when the painting was done. And it was done, of course, with the spaces that were already there in mind. So those were renovated. And the whole process just is astounding to me that you sit and you realize I'm going to redesign a whole museum. And I don't even know. I just moved and I can't figure out where to put my couch. That's how bad I am. So here you are redesigning all these paintings and rooms. And it's just, it's terrific. And congratulations. We have three guests within us in our Milwaukee studios. And they are some of the people who have been at the forefront of this renovation. Joining us is Dan Keegan, who has served as the Milwaukee Art Museum's director for the past 8 years. And he really negotiated the agreement, with Milwaukee County and the War Memorial Center on this deal for long-term management and funding of the facilities. He is a Green Bay native. I don't know why this is in his resume, but it's interesting, who comes from a family of cheesemakers and dairy farmers. And he came to Milwaukee from the San Jose Museum of Art. He is an artist as well, a ceramist. And Dan, thanks very much for being with us again.
Oh, it's
been
great,
a while.
Great to be with you, Kathleen. Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
Our pleasure. Brady Roberts has been with us many times. He's chief curator at the Milwaukee Art Museum since 2009. He leads a curatorial department of 30 employees, and he has been in other places as well. I didn't know that he was involved in three other museum building projects, so that's a lot of work. The Dubuque Museum of Art and the New Wing for Contemporary Art at the Phoenix Art Museum. Brady, a pleasure always to see you.
Great to see you, Kathleen.
And David Rustick is with us. David is the Milwaukee Art Museum's exhibition designer. He was chief designer at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, where he was a key participant in the museum's reinstallation and special exhibition designs. Started his career at the Phyllis Kind Gallery in Chicago, went to Minneapolis, and he is with us in our studio. David, thank you very much for being with us. Well, I cannot even begin to imagine, because it is such a transformed place and there are additions to it and all the art is in different places and it really is beautiful. It's like a whole new museum. It's just beautiful. But the thought of all of you sitting down and thinking about what the heck you were going to do, I can't even imagine what that was like. How you were going to redesign a whole museum, what was going to be in it, how you were going to work with the buildings that were there already to have the art kind of work with the buildings, what you were going to add. I mean, how did you do that? Did you just sit and talk for a few years?
Well, Kathleen, to be honest with you, we didn't know we were going to do this initially. All we knew was that the older buildings that are owned by the county were a campus of three buildings, and the two older buildings is where all of the art resides. And we only knew that we had problems with the buildings, that there were roof leaks, there were mold problems, there were difficulties with the HVAC system. So this whole journey started with trying to solve that, and then the consequences of knowing that we had to solve that led to everything else that has unfolded since.
Whew. So when you knew you were going to redo everything, then it required how many minds to get together and how many different visions? You all must have had very different visions. And how do you even come up with a vision for that vast amount of space?
Well, I'll let Brady address that, but you know, when I hired him 7 years ago, we walked the galleries and looked at the drip pans in the ceilings and discussed, you know, how are we going to fix this, and we both agreed that there was a golden opportunity here around the art.
You can't have drip pans in the that are catching rain from the ceiling.
That doesn't work, Brady. But,
no.
You know, for curators, we really live for this opportunity to reassess collections and the whole collection wing and to be able to conceptually wipe the slate clean and start from scratch. So that's really how we started, is from a very conceptual approach of what are the possibilities, what are the opportunities, what's the best location for each collection area. And then as time went on, we got more and more specific, and David actually built scale models of every gallery space. So we had 125,000 square feet of galleries in half-inch scale models and 2,500 works of art in half-inch scale models. So every curator could map out their whole collection area.
Mm. And it has such a completely different feel, David. Everything is so much brighter. It's all... it's also nice to move through. It has just a feeling of some rooms are just fun, and it's all much easier to look at, and it doesn't have a dark kind of feel that the old museum did have, I think.
I agree. I think Brady also put his finger on part of your initial question. How do you start something like this? You start with the right people, because, you know, just like anything, one person's challenge that seems completely insurmountable and like, where do I begin, is something someone else can't wait to dive into. So I think we had the right team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great team for the curators. We have curators who have been with us for 3-4 years now, and for them, this is exactly the kind of thing you want to do as a curator, is work with an exhibition designer, go down to the storage vaults, examine the collections in a fresh way, make new acquisitions that are unveiled, and really map out the whole installation of a collection and even the relationship between the collection areas. And the interesting thing that we discovered is the Kaler Building has a lot of great beauty to it that had been covered up over time. And I think that's something that David, working with the architects, was able to discover. And that's kind of a key part of our project, too, is the relationship of the art and the architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, it was a 6-year journey to begin to get our arms around the magnitude of the issues, and then to get on to the magnitude of the opportunity, as Brady is describing, around the artwork itself and the representation of the artwork. We began to think about, holy cow, we could do a brand new presentation of the entire collection of the Milwaukee Art Museum. Why? Because all of the artwork had to come out of the buildings in order to do the repairs.
And you had this chance. How did you decide when you looked at what you had, and how much did you have, and where was it? In a basement somewhere? There were all these paintings and sculptures that were stored away somewhere?
Sure. We had about 5% of our collection on view. Which
Just
would be
5%?
That's pretty typical of American museums. So we had about 1,500 works out of 30,000 works on view before we closed down the galleries for renovation. And now we have about 8% on view, so 2,500 works in 125,000 square feet of gallery space.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for the curators coming in, it was looking at what was on view, what should be on view, what are the new acquisitions, what's in storage that maybe should come back out. And also there were things... like a great Larry Bell sculpture that had been damaged 15 years ago, a real cornerstone work for our contemporary collection. This was the time to work with the artist and go through the difficult process of figuring out how to repair a vacuum-plated glass piece, very difficult to deal with. But we worked with him and worked through that, and now it's on display. So there are a number of those stories as well.
So how did you decide, and this isn't the only area that's expanded, but you have this really beautiful, I like photography, this beautiful gallery devoted to photography now. You have, I'm not a huge fan of 21st century design. I think that's a gallery, but boy, is that a fun room, you know? I mean, it opens you up, I think, to art that you normally thought, well, I'm not a big fan of this, but then you walk into the space and you say, oh yeah, this is good.
Yeah, these are two new areas for us. I mean, essentially, photography, which has been a key part of our program since the 1950s, we were one of the earliest museums in the U.S. to collect photography, but by the time we shut down the galleries, photography had one wall that was dedicated for
one wall
presentation. So about half a dozen photos.
photographs. Now we have 10,000 square feet in the new Hertzfeld Center for Photography and Media Arts, and it's a 21st century look at photography, which literally means writing with light. So you'll see traditional print photographs, but also video installation and light installation. And there's some absolutely spectacular works in the Hertzfeld Center. So this will be destination. And I think also 21st century design, it's very interesting to me, because if you look at this desk or your pen, I mean, everything that we work with is designed. And what you're going to see are beautiful design things that can intersect with your life every day. So that makes it sort of a unique collecting area.
Mm-hmm. And then the parts of the museum that seem kind of dark, you know, have a whole different theme to them now, with the wallpaper you've chosen and interactive displays, the paintings that were heavier, that were older, not the Impressionists, but some of the others. When you go through 300 years of American painting, it's done in such a way that it's really interesting. You don't feel like you're going into a deep, dank part of a museum to see this.
Well, this is where it's helpful to have a chief designer. And what David Russick brought to the table was, of course, his prior experience at Indianapolis Museum of Art, so he'd already gone through it. But we also knew that we had to start over. For the reason that you mentioned, Kathleen, it did have a dark feeling to it. Mm-hmm. The floors were dark. The walls were basically a uniform gray. And it had its moment. It's sort of 70s kind of design style to it. And it was David who came to the table, having been through this, and said, well, let's start over. Let's start from scratch. Let's assume that art isn't anywhere specific in the galleries at this point. And then I still remember the day, David, when you said, and I'm going to build you guys models. And we said, what do you mean you're going to build models? And he said, I'm just going to get simple, cheap foam core, and we're going to build half-inch to the foot models of the whole space, so you'll be able to see the actual spaces. Let's roll up our sleeves, and then we can think from there.
Mm. And then you took that model, and you've fiddled around with what you're going to put in all these spaces. You changed your mind every day? Or
every minute.
Every minute. Oh, man.
We're still changing our minds. We have to go back and move things. No, I'm just kidding. But that it did become a place where the curators could all go. I mean, it's a physical reality, just like the museum is, except it's a much smaller version of it. So the curators could go and work on the areas that had been designated for those collections. And the only rule that we had was that if it wasn't the area you're working on, leave your hands off it, because everybody could go and look at it. We had people leave notes to us. Other staff members would say, I love this, or what are you doing? Or, you know, I mean, it was really a kind of a community effort. But again, with the right people in place, it did sort of take on a life of its own. Yeah. Around the table of these models, which actually filled a gigantic room. I remember when I first started making them, Brady was like, he pointed to a room, and I was like, Brady, I could do like a portion of the museum in there. He's like, well, how big is that going to be? And I was like, well, I think if I've done my math right off the top of my head, the one level of the Kaler building needs about 18 feet by 13 feet. And he was like, oh my God. So yeah, it's really been right from there. That's a good point, Dan. I do think it kind of like lit people's imaginations. And after that, we still made major changes. I mean, yeah. we really did. That goes back several years, but it allowed us to see it. And since you start with the visual experience, you're going to end with a visual experience, it seemed like the logical way to go.
Models also de-stress the process. It's sort of dollhouse-like. Mm-hmm. And if you remember as a kid playing with, you know, miniatures of anything,
sure,
you can arrange and rearrange forever. And what the models allowed the creative team and the curators to do is to try something one day, mm-hmm, sleep on it, and come back the next day. And I watched many times curators have things laid out and take it down and do it completely differently. And it's because, as Brady pointed at the outset, The work itself was scaled half inch to the foot. So these were literally miniature sculptures and miniature paintings on the walls, dollhouse-like, that could be arranged and rearranged without pounding a single nail. And that's an amazing de-stressing of what has to be a very creative and scholarly process.
Yeah. Well, and we adopted, I remember this too, I'm just trying to think, Kathleen, of the of like what were the pivotal moments for each of us. And I remember we adopted a policy of sleep on it. Because, you know, just like Dan saying, you'd have what seemed like a crazy idea, and you could work it out in the model, and people would see it, and, you know, and sometimes you'd get your little yellow sticker that was like, you know, what is this? But then you'd look at it again and say, you know what, I actually kind of like that. And a lot of the best ideas sort of evolved, and again, because there was a physical place for it's kind of like your desk. You know, you rearrange it. You know, the very first day you take a job, you set things up, but over the course of time, it probably evolves, and that's what we did. And just like Dan said, the nice part was is that it was really easy to move little paper pieces around, as opposed to, oh, I don't know, the Cornelia Parker that, you know, is this gigantic piece that weighs several tons, and
you
really want to get that in the right
tons.
Place. First time.
We have a number of installations that took several weeks each to install. The installation period's been really interesting. And if we didn't have this roadmap, if we didn't have these things laid out in model form, we'd have a real problem.
Well, and I think that happens you mentioned, remodeling a house or rearranging
furniture. Just a sofa. I don't know a house. Forget.
I think that's a really good example of what happens to institutions is that if they don't plan and consider and reconsider and consider again, then things like the Cornelia Parker, which is a wonderful piece, go up, and then someone like you or I goes and says, oh, that's a tragedy because that should be a foot to the right, you know, and it should, and they know it too. That's a lot of it, is that it's not rocket science, but the planning, you know, God is in the details, as they say, and how do you get those details right? That's the thing I think we labored over most.
I would add that, many people would probably assume that reinstalling an entire collection is not unlike interior decoration, as we're discussing. Mm-hmm. And it is that in part, but it is so much more, because not only do the objects have to be placed thoughtfully, beautifully, relationally, as we would do in our own homes, this also has a story to it. So placing a couch in a museum is part of a design story, for example. So it's relational relative to other objects, other chairs or furniture, etc. So there's that kind of piece to it that has to be sorted out. And then there's the historical story that marched through art history. And then, Kathleen, there's the experiential piece of it, because we have visitors that have to find their way through this museum now in a meaningful way that is inspirational, that is entertaining, mm-hmm. that is challenging, provocative, exciting. And all of that has to come into this thing that we might assume is sort of an interior decoration challenge. Mm.
And also, as was pointed out to me, that you're also looking at our eyes and the way we're seeing things as we're looking at a lot of the art, so that when we're looking at that big sculpture area, the ton fiber weaving, whatever exactly.
The Claire Zeisler large.
Yeah, so
fiber
we're looking
piece.
At all yes. of that from above, too, so that you're thinking about our eyes while you're designing things,
that was
things, right?
Something that also was revealed in the model. I mean, the Kaler building has concrete columns every 24 feet. So there it is. Now, the question was, where do you want to see them and where do you want them hidden? So in the first three galleries, that are 200 feet long and 24 feet wide, you see no columns because we buried them all for the paintings. Then you go under the mezzanine and out into the major sculpture area, and all of the columns are exposed. So it's the original language of the architecture. And this is something we decided early on, that we wanted to celebrate the three architectural chapters of the museum. So the earliest collections, the Leighton collection, the European collection, are in the Saarinen building, the 1957 building. The modern collection is in the Kaler Building, which was built for the Bradley Collection. So, and that's a white cube. And the historic collections are very warm, intimate, very colorful. The modern collection is in a white cube. The unifying factor is that we've opened up the floor plan, so there are clear major hallways, and you can see from old master painting into modern art without reading a sign, understand where you're going, and you have a variety of options.
Right. Yeah. Let's welcome phone calls for you. I know many people haven't seen this yet because it opens on Tuesday, right?
Tuesday, November 24th.
Isn't that next Tuesday?
That's next Tuesday.
Are you ready?
We will always be ready. Today, you tell me, guys, what are we, 95%
You're pretty
there?
Close.
Maybe we're inching up to 97% ready today.
Good. Yeah, I felt as though you were. We are welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the, what do you want to call it, the renovation of the Milwaukee Art Museum?
Sure.
Or the renovation?
Sure.
The big renovation. It took 6 years. It's opening to the public next Tuesday. It's beautiful. I saw it this morning, and you need to go. It's beautiful. There's a new entrance to the museum.
Yes, there is. That was an important piece for us because when the 1970s addition was added to the War Memorial Art Museum designed by Eero Saarinen, David Kaler's design called for a new entrance. The main entrance was moved from the War Memorial side to the lakefront. And then when the Santiago Calatrava-designed addition was opened in 2001, we closed off that east addition entrance to make the grand main entrance the Calatrava addition. But we also recognize that, especially in warm weather months, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, arguably, visitors along the lakefront who had no way into the museum.
Yes.
And so it was important for us to reconnect the experience of the museum with the lakefront.
Let's go to phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the renovation of the Milwaukee Art Museum. It opens to the public next Tuesday. It's a whole new museum, as far as my eyes could tell. And we have three guests with us. Dan Keegan, Milwaukee Art Museum's director, Brady Roberts, chief curator at the museum, and David Russick, who is the exhibition designer. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Don in Superior is our first caller. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hi, Don.
I just wanted to say, even though I grew up in Milwaukee as a kid, I'd never been to the art museum. And in 2010 or 11, there was a wonderful exhibit of French Impressionists and pastel. And I was just impressed with the architecture of the museum and also the exhibits, and I became a member, and I've been a member ever since. But listening to the enthusiasm of both you and your three guests, I'm going to be heading in towards Chicago at the beginning of December, and I'm going to see the new museum.
Good.
Refurbished museum. So thanks a lot for this program, but for that, an incentive to stop by.
Yeah,
so thanks a lot.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for the call.
Well, that's it's really nice to hear, and thank you as well, Don. You know, one of the things that we made a decision to do early on was not shut down the museum completely. Even though this was a very complicated project, very difficult project to renovate the collection galleries, we kept the program strong. Our feature exhibition space stayed strong. Don made reference to some of the exhibitions that he saw. And we kept our education programming and other public programs alive. People also don't realize the Milwaukee Art Museum comprises 365,000 square feet of space. And the gallery's under renovation now, along with the new East End, about 150,000 square feet of space. So whereas many museums would shut down for 2 or 3 years to do a project like this, we compressed it all into 14 months and did it at breakneck speed, but also kept the programs going.
Yeah. And there's a whole new, speaking of the exhibitions, there's a whole new exhibition hall in the museum now.
This is one of the great pieces of the addition that we built, is it gave us a 4,000 square foot changing exhibition space, the Bradley Family Gallery. So now we have two changing exhibitions at any one time, and it means that we're never dark. So with one special exhibition gallery, we were, for a quarter of every year, we had no special exhibition. Now with a staggered presence, presentation will always have a special exhibition on view.
Mm-hmm.
And our curators have been working on exhibitions for years, so they've been really anxious to get this added space, and we'll be able to present so much more to the public.
Yeah, isn't that nice? There are also, we should, you can't beat a good view, and we may as well talk about some of the additional. The prettiest view in the city is, I think, standing in the Calatrava. I go there just to view that. It's beautiful. It's just, but now there are more views. So you get the Calatrava, you get the lake, another view of the lake. The lake is a really beautiful thing, and it's nice to incorporate that, isn't it?
It is, and then we've given you a place to stand inside the building and look at the Calatrava.
Right. Yeah, and that's new, isn't it? We haven't had that view before.
Well, that's right, and that solution came out of one of the problems that we recognized early on, and that is when the 1970s addition was built, the east facade along the lake was two stories of glass. But over the years, Kathleen, as the collection expanded, we literally blocked off those glass walls looking at the lake. And so what we ended up having to deal with then was how do you protect the art with no light and provide these beautiful views to visitors who want to have the beautiful views?
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
the East End, as we're calling it, the East Edition now, is that solution in which we now have the art protected from natural light where we need to protect it, and we've offered people those beautiful vistas, places to rest and refresh where they want to do that along the lakefront.
Mm. Now, tell me seriously and honestly about disagreements that may arise, because everybody has a kind of art that he or she is most fond of and would like to go to a museum that has nothing but that kind of art. How do you decide how much space will be devoted to photography? How much space will be American painters, 300-year history, or American Haitian folk art, or whatever it is? Because that's a deliberate decision, it seems, as to how much space all of that gets.
Well, one of the great things that happened was that every collection area got more space in this project. And the way we did that was by taking care of some problems with the building, like the outdoor sculpture courtyard on the second floor of the Kaler Building, which brought in all sorts of water, and it was basically a dead space in the middle of the second floor. That is now enclosed and is right at the heart of the American collection, which has 14,000 square feet of space. It's never looked so good.
Yeah,
the
great.
Photography collection in the lower level is expansive now, 10,000 square feet. So every collection area grew, and we had art storage tucked all over the museum in the galleries. You wouldn't notice it walking by, but it's about 6,000 square feet. And there was another 6,000 square feet that was in what were originally Saarinen and gallery spaces. So we returned those to galleries. So as a result, we gained the extra 25,000 square feet of gallery space in this project.
Mm. Well, did you fix the leaks in the roof?
Well, that, of course, was job one, and that required a partnership with Milwaukee County as owners of the building, and that was, in some respects, a hard-fought battle. It was a complicated piece of this because as tenants in the buildings, it was not on us to make the repairs. And to the credit of the leadership of Milwaukee County, they stepped up. They recognized that they have to be partners in this. And we said if the county will repair the buildings that it's responsible for, we will add value to that and redo this entire collection. So $34 million project. Taxpayers in Milwaukee County put up $12 million, and we put up the rest of that all through private donations. That was really the logjam that needed to break, first and foremost, because once the agreements were reached and that those commitments would be made to repair the buildings, we knew that we could then go out to our supporters and the public and ask that important question: will you support the revitalization, reinvention, if you will, of the museum?
Mm-hmm. I think, too, you know, just listening to what Dan's saying, I think that goes back to your initial question again, Kathleen. I like to think that every step that we took was guided by a sort of logic, because you're right, it was really daunting. It's a really huge task. But as Dan said earlier, you know, you've got to get the leaking roof and, you know, that general housekeeping. Anybody who's ever owned a house knows, you know, a clogged up sewer line or a leaking roof or a chimney that doesn't draw correctly isn't the sexiest thing to fix, but it must be fixed. Mm-hmm. And when you get those things right, then it allows you to get the other things right that people cruising through, nobody ever notices when you've got a brand new roof. But it's really nice when you've got guests in the living room and they're not having water drip on your head.
You don't have water pills. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the other piece I would add is that we needed to redo the lease agreements with Milwaukee County, and those are now, those were 84-year agreements. So not only do we make the repairs, we've made the investment, and now we have the assurance that we'll be able to stay in this facility for a long, long time.
Great. And do you have, when you advertise this museum really to the rest of the world, because it's something different now. It's completely different. What do you say about it? What do you say, what makes its mark?
Well, what's interesting, I think, for the Milwaukee Art Museum nationally and internationally is that we're a museum that has become identified with Santiago Calatrava.
Yes.
And his first major commission in North America. And what people don't know, by and large, is that we have a world-class collection. So this project really announces that the Milwaukee Art Museum is both things. It's great architecture and amazing world-class collections.
Mm-hmm. And then there's always, and you don't see this in a lot of older museums, you had the chance to change the rooms, too, so that it's not four walls and you got paintings on all four walls. There are different structures inside a room and different showcase of objects that are in interactive exhibits and railings with artwork overlooking the other side of the railing. I mean, it's very interesting. Each room is not just a block. It's kind of a creation, right?
Well, David had some very clear ideas from the beginning that it shouldn't be a monochromatic presentation of the collection, that we had an opportunity to be inventive and creative with the spaces, again, afforded us by the models. So it's pretty easy to take a razor knife and slice through a styrofoam, a piece of foam core,
exactly,
right, and plug in the hot glue gun and say, you don't like that wall here? You don't like it at all? Well, how about over here?
Uh-huh.
But David, I had some very specific thoughts from the get-go about how we could change the basic flow through the spaces.
Yeah, what were they, David?
Well, you know, I was going to say another thing that I think needs to be said is that, you know, the Milwaukee Art Museum has been a wonderful museum for a long, long time, and there's been a lot of people who've worked there very hard and just as diligently.
Absolutely.
As the three guys talking today.
Right.
And it wasn't like they didn't get it right. We had an opportunity to do the whole thing.
Right.
How many people get to take something and take it down to the studs and start all over?
It's astounding.
The museum wasn't, aesthetically, the museum was not in the situation of the disrepair that, like, maybe some of the roof issues and some of the infrastructure was. Aesthetically, the museum was strong. It had just been piecemealed. You know, as this will now. I mean, over the course of the next 30 years, what is about to reopen will get changed. It's not mm-hmm. it's not sacrosanct. People will change it. People will have different ideas, and in another generation, they'll probably hit the reset button again for the very reasons that we did. And I think that that's it's not false modesty. That's just reality. What we did try to do, though, was to see the opportunity to say, "Oh my gosh," rather than be overwhelmed, take a step back, stay at 30,000 feet, and look at the whole program. Look at the way all the pieces should plug in. Look for the design perspective wasn't just picking out colors and making things beautiful, but how do things function? It's form as well as function. So where were the pathways? Where was the connectivity that had been lost over the years as people did projects within the space that didn't necessarily speak to each other very mm-hmm. well any longer. And I just think that that's, personally, that was the most exciting part, was that we got that. And any time that I was feeling overwhelmed, you know, I had Dan, I had Brady, the team of curators is just absolutely fantastic, because a person like me doesn't know that much about art history, just knows what might be interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference. Mm-hmm. It's kind of back to what Dan was saying about the many roles that the final product had to play.
Mm-hmm. And we had basic tenets that we knew we had to address in partnership with HGA, the architects on the project, working with David and his design experience. We knew, for example, that the wayfinding had to be clear rather than confusing. We knew that the overall ambient feel of the spaces had to be cheerful. We needed an overall brightness. The dark floors needed to come back up to a lighter value of natural. We knew that we needed restrooms on every floor. And, you know, whoever thinks about restrooms in a museum, well, I can tell you, every single visitor who ever goes to a museum has difficulty finding restrooms or hates
the fact that
they have to backtrack through the entire space that they just came through to find the restroom. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things, those amenities, not one, not two, but three locations within the museum to rest and refresh, to get a beverage, to get a snack, to get a sandwich or a full meal in a cafe, to just really think about those creature comforts alongside that presentation of the art to make the whole thing sing at a higher level, a brighter level, if you will.
Yeah. Well, especially now, because it's one thing you can say for sure, it's not an afternoon experience anymore.
No, it wasn't just a morning experience.
No,
I know.
That's one thing we're hearing from people who are visiting us now, that the museum seems so much bigger, and we're realizing that the floor plan was so baffling before that people probably never made their way through the entire museum. Now you can see all of the spaces, but you realize it really is a very large collection, a large campus.
It does. It seems like it's at least double the size.
The other piece that was important that came out of this was the distinctiveness of the experiences within the collection itself. And so the galleries flow, yes, from one to another, and the wayfinding is clear, yes. But when you go in the galleries, each of them is unique in a way. And whether that's as basic as a color shift or as exciting as a whole different way of looking at art that you thought you knew, or the way in which furniture is presented, the story behind the carver, for example, as it is in the Chipstone galleries. And so there is a dynamic range that has been extended. There's a variety of the look and feel that makes it an exciting experience. Mm-hmm. And so whether you have a day or 2 days, you may need 3 days to see the whole thing, or you have a few minutes, it becomes easier, frankly, to focus in on something that catches your eye.
And there are some interesting, you always want children to enjoy themselves too. There's some creative, I think, interactive experiences. I was thinking of the Haitian art room, mm-hmm. where you can hear the sounds of the painting, of what's going on in the painting, which I thought was, well, isn't that creative?
Mm-hmm. It's a really cool thing, those metal sculptures that they made out of oil drums, and now you can see how that whole process unfolds.
Yeah, and that gallery is part of our Kohl's Art Generation Center. It's a, what is it, David, 10,000 square feet of space with the art studio and the art lab gallery and the Haitian gallery that you're describing, designed to be family-friendly, but also to be powerful and compelling for the art lover. Mm-hmm. So it's not dumbing down, and you've cited the Haitian experience. I mean, the Art Museum has arguably one of the finest, if not the finest, collection of Haitian art in the world following the disasters in Haiti in which those artworks and museums were destroyed. But to present it in a way that we chose to present it, to move it front and center, to make it part of a destination of the folk and the self-taught experience, became an important piece of how we add that variety, but also showcase things in unique ways rather than same ways.
That's also one of the most transformed areas of the museum now. The mezzanine level was particularly unsatisfying before because of the heavy grid light system that was right above your head. And now we've opened it up. And
oh,
David,
it's bright.
When people get off the elevator, they say, wait a minute, I must be on the wrong floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't look anything like it used to before. And David had this idea of giving it one cohesive identity. So our world-class collection of folk, outsider, and Haitian art is now all on that level.
The other piece I would add, Kathleen, is that, you know, the fundamental question here in this is, you know, what is art? And I think we've moved that conversation from what is art. It can be a lot of different things. It can be two pieces of reflective glass that are standing at a right angle. It can be chunks of rock from the cliffs of Dover. It can be a beautiful Renaissance statue. The fundamental shift is to what does art do? And how can we create meaning within the experience of the museum so that people come closer to that moment of magic of art? I mean, we all know there's something magical. It's been part of us throughout the history of civilization, recorded civilization. We've always sung songs, always danced dances, always painted images. Why? It's because what art does is something that nothing else does. And so that's what was at the heart of this, to try to make sure that that experience measured up to what we all know, those of us who live and breathe art every day, that we all know is embedded right within each of these objects. Mm,
and do we ever need it? Do we ever need it? Let's go to a phone call. Richard is calling from Madison. Hi, Richard. Thanks for waiting.
You're welcome. Congratulations on what you've done. I mean, I can remember as a kid from Clintonville going down to Milwaukee to visit my sister and going out to the museum by the lake. It was that long ago. Hmm. But that is not the point I was trying to make. Here in Madison, where I live, nearly every enterprise revolves around TIF money. How did you guys do this?
Revolves around, Richard, I didn't hear you. Revolves around what money?
TIF.
TIF money, tax increment.
Oh,
financing.
Okay. Thank you.
Incremental financing.
Okay.
We're hit with it every day here.
Mm-hmm.
For any project. How did you guys do it?
Dan?
Well, that's a great question. I believe, as someone who's relatively new to the community, even though I grew up in Green Bay, most of my career was away. And one of the things that drew me to Milwaukee was what the caller is pointing out, which is, how did we do it? We did something here. Milwaukee is a very special community. It has longstanding multi-generational commitment to the community, to the arts. And frankly, the people with the horsepower read dollars to make that commitment back to a community, to not wait for the government handout, even though we had a county partnership. That was an important piece of this. But through both of these projects, the 2001 edition, the Calatrava building, and this one, it's primarily private dollars, because this is a community that believes in itself and believes in that value of investing back in the community. And it can become almost a snowballing effect where it builds. If we look at the Renaissance underway in Milwaukee today, and think about the buildings going on downtown, the influx of apartment construction, mm-hmm. High-rise office towers. All of this is part of this continuum of investing in the Milwaukee Art Museum. It's people who believe in the community and are willing to put the dollars on the line.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Richard, for your call. I don't mean to. I know that a lot of you haven't seen this yet, but feel free to join the conversation if you would like. I'm sure many of you are anticipating, excuse me, the grand opening. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And I would imagine this is a grand opening beyond the grand opening for everybody who's in this area who's going to flock and see it. It's a grand opening for the art world, for the museum world, too, isn't it?
Well, we hope it does catch the attention of the art lovers out there. This is a nationally known museum, a museum with an international reputation. And as we work with our colleagues in the museum world, curators and directors, the Milwaukee Art Museum is on their radar. They are definitely tracking that we have done something that a lot of museums haven't been able to pull off successfully. As this last caller pointed out, we raised the money. We transformed the building, and we did it, frankly, pretty cheaply. This is a shoestring budget. $34 million is a lot of money, but when you're talking about museum renovations that can cost hundreds of millions
right.
of dollars,
right. It does seem like
this was a bargain, and so mm-hmm. it has caught the attention of the greater art world.
Yeah. Is it hard every time there's one of those, you know, spaceships that lands on a planet and it took 10 years to get there? I just can't believe all these people spent all this time and they had to wait all those years to see it work. Is that true of this, too, where you're just getting real antsy? How do you wait for 6 years before all that work, you can finally see it?
I think it felt like a pretty nice pace because we started at such a conceptual level in terms of what we wanted to accomplish and actually brought in people from all over the country, museum professionals and other thinkers. We had a list of things that we thought we could improve upon with our presentation of the collections. But when we brought in a think tank that Chipstone Foundation organized, one of our partners at the museum, we just took them through the museum, and then we listened to them and said, what are the opportunities that that you would see for us? And that's where we picked up the idea of celebrating the three architectural chapters of the museum. Mm-hmm. So over the course of the planning, we had time to get more and more specific with our plans that formulated in the scale models. And then we were in the execution phase and the construction. I mean, it might have seemed like a long time, but you know, a 14-month project is pretty short when you think of museums like SF MoMA that are, you know, they're doing a renovation that will take over 3 years.
Right.
You know, one other thing here that Brady made me think of is that this museum in many ways tracks the history of Milwaukee. Our museum goes back to the Leighton Art Collection and the Leighton Gallery, founded in 1888, a gift of artwork from then Milwaukee businessman Frederick Leighton, meatpacker, who was collecting contemporary art. Now it's some of the older art in our collection. Mm-hmm. But he had the vision, if you will, to take this artwork that he was collecting and give it back to the community. And then partnering with some other Milwaukee businessmen in the late 1800s, they built a museum. And it was called the Leighton Art Gallery down on Mason and Jefferson. There's a parking garage there now across from Watts. The tea house, remember where that was?
Sure.
And in the 1950s, following World War II, they decided to move the Leighton Art Gallery into the new war memorial, called it the Milwaukee Art Center, and the rest is history. Hmm. But here it is today, 127, 28 years later.
Excuse me. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. The brand new, really, Milwaukee Art Museum opening November 24, next Tuesday. It's what we're talking about this hour, and we'll be with you, more of you, in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Deborah in Wisconsin Hills. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I'm actually in Brown Deer, but
okay.
I wanted to ask two questions. I wondered if anybody had videotaped or recorded the original construction of the museum, then the Calatrava edition, and now this one. And then you could set up I know you're not going to do an amphitheater right now, but that would be someplace with ample seating or just an exhibit to show where people could watch the history of the museum.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
That's a great question. We do have a lot of documentation of the construction of the museum segments over the years, going all the way back to the Errol Saarinen-designed War Memorial Art Museum. We've got great historic photos. The Calatrava edition was very heavily documented. In fact, has been turned into a wonderful film about the construction of the Calatrava building. That runs oftentimes on weekends in the museum's Lubar Auditorium. Coming off of this project now, the caller's just given me a good idea. It's time to probably pull all those photos together and look at the full history of the museum across its three buildings,
idea.
Plus a new east end, and maybe rework that into a full story about the museum. So all the material is there in our extensive archives. And, yeah, I came away with a great idea here today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deborah. Chris in Madison. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
I am in a wheelchair, and I am, of course, concerned about accessibility, both in parking, getting in the building, and around the building. Could you address that, please? I'll take it offline.
All right.
Thank you.
The museum is fully accessible in all of its buildings. Whether you pull into the garage that is the beautiful garage below the Calatrava edition and the accessible parking that is there and then direct access into the galleries. If you come into the new east end that we just built, you can pull into the North War Memorial parking lot and pull into those accessible parking spaces, and it is ramped and level and easy roll right into the museum. Restrooms right there at that east end and so on. Elevators, fully accessible. It was an important part of what we wanted to do. And I'll give you one more example that most people probably wouldn't track, but correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but you also lowered the artwork a couple of inches in your hang to make it a little more visible. I think some museums do a little higher hang of the art.
Yeah, and I know that David was thinking about these accessibility issues as he developed the floor plan for every gallery, so it is something that was top of mind for us.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've made the labels bigger and more readable, and we have audio guide, audio stops. In fact, I just heard the number today. I think there's, for starters, 200 audio guide stops for visitors to
wow.
sample, and those numbers will be on all of the labels of the artwork, and we'll continue to build that over the years ahead. My goal, I'd like an audio stop option for every work of art.
That would be nice. Well, so the big day is Tuesday, but the museum's always been great about having side events that are taking place, too. Their special exhibition, there will be lectures on what's going on now, and there's a new exhibition opening on Tuesday, too.
Yeah, that's right. So right now, the Larry Sultan exhibition is open, and on Tuesday, the Sam Francis exhibition will be open in the Bradley Family Gallery. So this is another one of the great things about the new museum. We have whole areas of our collection we've never been able to show. So we have about 500 graphic works by Sam Francis, one of the pioneering printmakers of the post-war era. We've never shown them before. So now you're going to see highlights of that great collection in our special exhibition gallery.
Wonderful. Well, enjoy the moment and then some, as you so richly deserve. It really is. I don't usually go on and on about things, but I just love the place.
Well,
it was fun.
Well, we're delighted that you had a chance to come out and see the new Milwaukee Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Kids 12 and under free every day, robust programs and lectures, as you know. And we really hope that the public coming to this museum will see it as a brand new museum.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Thank you. Our thanks to Dan Keegan, Milwaukee Art Museum's director, Brady Roberts, chief curator at the Milwaukee Art Museum. David Russick is the Milwaukee Art Museum's exhibition designer. Thanks to each of them for coming to our Milwaukee studios. And, of course, we will be highlighting many of their exhibits as the months go on. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming out from National Public Radio, and we'll be with you again tomorrow. John Gerda is with us. John's always a terrific guest and has a beautiful book. He'll be with us the second hour of tomorrow's program, and we will look at the issue of partisanship, hour one of our show. So please listen.